Bob Dylan was standing 2 feet away from me. It was the late 70s, and I was the piano player on Saturday Night Live. I was talking with his current producer, the legendary Jerry Wexler, as we watched Dylan rehearse his band. I was right where I belonged. Surely God had blessed me by putting me in this favored position. Only one problem, Dylan was wearing a huge cross. So what was the problem? A little background information. I grew up in an Orthodox synagogue. I also grew up at the end of Highway 61. My hometown of Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, is at the northern extreme of that storied road. Thunder Bay is where my close friend Wayne Tanner, one of the original Dylanologists, turned me on to the great singer-songwriter. His album Highway 61 Revisited was the Talmud to the Torah of my life. I learned Al Cooper's high organ line and Paul Griffin's piano part on Like a Rolling Stone, note for note, sound for sound. The keyboard combination helped define Dylan's new sound, and the sound made me absolutely crazy. Then there was the certain knowledge that Dylan, the most important poet of our generation, was also a landsman. Bobby Zimmerman was a fellow Jew. In the 70s, I had heard that Bob had returned to his Orthodox roots. Supposedly, he was studying with a Hasidic rabbi in Brooklyn. Then came the rumors that our man Zimmy had ventured beyond the Old Testament into the New. I didn't want to believe it. I clung to the notion that once they cut the tip, you're always hip. Yet there he was, on stage in Studio 8H at 30 Rock in the middle of New York City, singing, "You've Got to Serve Somebody," and I knew damn well that somebody sure wasn't Moses. I was bothered and bewildered. Dylan was bewitched. "Can we lose the cross, Jerry?" I whispered in Wexler's hairy ear.
"Oh, I wouldn't say anything," he said in a panic. "Bob takes this shit seriously."
"I'm kidding," I said. But I wasn't. The Rolling Stone rolled on. The planet took several spins, and several worlds later, I was amazed to find myself on nightly television as musical director of Late Night with David Letterman. Word came down that on this particular night, there were to be two guests. The first was the flamboyant pianist beloved by audiences in Las Vegas, none other than Liberace. The second was Dylan. Liberace was there to cook, Dylan to play. "Hey, Dave," I said at the top of the show, "what a night. Liberace cooking? In my book, that cat always cooks. And Dylan, I'm shocked. Did you know he went electric?"
"Calm down, Paul," Dave said.
After Dave and Liberace worked up a soulful souffle, Dylan came on with a borrowed band. Nonetheless, his three-song set was powerful. His license to kill killed. Afterwards, I couldn't keep from knocking on heaven's door. I had to bond with Dylan. When I stuck my head in his dressing room, I saw that he was with his lovely and talented girlfriend, singer Clydie King. "Hi, Bob," I said, and offering Clydie a smile, quoted Dylan himself. "What's a sweetheart like her doing at a place like this?" Bob nodded in my direction. He didn't say a word. "You know, Bob, you grew up just 130 miles to the south of my hometown in Canada. We're linked by Highway 61. And I gotta tell you something else, man. Just like you, I spent my growing up years with my ear pressed against the transistor listening to those faraway southern radio stations. Just like you, I learned to love rhythm and blues. And hey, Bob, how about that Bobby V? You played piano with him. I could sing both parts to take good care of my baby. We're soul brothers." I waited for his response, but none came. He just seemed to be staring into space, but I kept going. "When you sang Roy Head's Treat Her Right in rehearsal today, Bob, it sounded just great. I wish you'd record it." Finally, Bob looked me in the eyes. I'd obviously made a connection.
"Paul, do you think you could introduce me to Larry Bud Millman?" he asked, referring to the lovable nerd who was a running character on our show. I thought Dylan was kidding, but he wasn't.
Years later, I encountered a different Bob at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction dinner. This Bob enthusiastically grabbed his guitar and joined the post-dinner jam. His fellow jammers that night were, among others, Mick Jagger, Tina Turner, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, and Jeff Beck. Bill Graham and I were running the thing together. In those years, there were no rehearsals. The jams were completely spontaneous. As a finale, I called Like a Rolling Stone. Dylan graciously took the mic and began to sing, backed up by Mick and Tina. After the second chorus, Bill came out and whispered in my ear, "Guitar cutting session." He wanted the guitarists to play against each other. I set them up, first Beck, then Harrison, then all the others. The guitar riffs were stupendous, but now it was time to get back to the song. I looked at Bob and gestured towards the mic. He stared back blankly. He clearly didn't know what to do. I moved in next to Dylan, realizing I had to lay it out for him. He needed to sing. So instead of gesturing, I just whispered in his ear, "How does it feel?" "Wow," I thought. "I'm directing Dylan to sing his own song with his own lyric." Then he got it. He went to the mic and sang, with Zimmerman zest, "How does it feel to be on your own?" And with that, if you'll forgive the pun, our poet laureate got us out of a jam.